What's the name of the podcast, Ethan?
I don't fucking know.
Yeah, it's not a comedy.
It's not going to be a podcast. It's going to be a fucking train wreck.
I wouldn't say that.
Welcome to How to Not Comedy, Lauren.
Hello.
Thank you. Lauren's quickly becoming one of my favorite, like, newer comedians in the scene. Your last set here on, I think it was last Tuesday. Or the Tuesday before?
It would have been the Tuesday before. I don't feel like I did as well last Tuesday because I was quite nervous and trying out like
new bits.
Yeah, I tried out storytelling for the first time.
Yeah.
And so because I was so nervous about that at the end, I was like nervous all the way through, even like the familiar material. So
yeah.
Wasn't as good. But the time before that was, yeah, one of my favourite sets I've ever done.
It was insane. You lit the place on fire. Like...
Was that here you're talking about?
Yeah, it was the week I emceed.
Oh, fuck, I missed it.
Yeah, yeah. Just
I was doing stupid trivia.
You bring shame upon the comedy scene.
I do, by doing that shit. Don't do trivia, kids.
Yeah.
You'll get broken up with.
your set now, you're so much more punchy. Like, you set up punchline.
Yeah.
Like, it's, yeah, it is a pleasure to watch because... Obviously, I remember your very first set, and like, don't get me wrong, you've got like, you're a genuinely funny person, so your ability to make people laugh is always going to be there. But now that we're seeing the refinement of not only you, but like, there's a lot of more junior people in the scene, you're like, oh wow, man, it just makes me want to work harder.
How long, you said it was a year you've been
like,
doing it now?
Tuesday this week.
At the Wicco?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we did Wicco Wednesday, so it was Tuesday. But yeah, it's like 1 year exactly.
I couldn't believe that when you said it. I'm like, there's no way this bitch has been doing it a year. She's too good.
I was like really shocked just coming back after lockdown and then just seeing like some really positive comments. And I don't know, I just never really saw my stuff as that good or... anything. And then someone was like, oh, where do you want comedy to take you? And I'm like, the pub.
Yeah.
but yeah, so we had a lot of lockdown and stuff in that time. But
maybe that's why it feels longer.
Yeah.
Because we've had all the lockdowns. I'm like, Lauren's been doing it for like at least 2 years. I thought it felt like way longer.
Yeah.
I was a bit surprised by that.
So what's your style of writing obviously is... A lot of it's based off your life and stuff like that. But are you sitting down at designated times to write? Are you just sort of doing it as it comes up, like if you think of something?
Generally, I'll just be in the car or shower and then just random shit comes to my mind. Or I will just be talking with people and someone will be like, oh, that's funny. And then a lot of the time I will then take stuff to the writing group. And I think that writing group has really made me excel a lot more in just understanding how to do joke setup and how to, I don't know, what not to say and what not to do, I guess, in some ways.
Yeah.
That's what this podcast was supposed to be about. What not to do and what not to say, because it's how to not comedy. So the idea was to, like, focus on, like, what are some of those things that you've said that you regret?
I don't think I really regret anything, but
because you're like, you learn from it, and
yeah,
all
learn
that
from it. And I don't know, I think a lot of it has been around learning to punch up rather than punch up, not punch down. That has been pretty good. And also I think I'm a very much a shock humor sense of person, and I think with that, like, just knowing to know when, like, the quietness followed by like laughter, which is more anxious, isn't as good as just like hitting a joke really hard and people just enjoying it. So it's about kind of how you put that in context.
Sometimes I like to break the tension a bit, like if it's something dark, like you're doing a dark joke and it's really tense in the audience, and then to finally let them laugh, that's, I like those ones.
Well, I started with, I've got a joke, and it's a suicide joke, and it's so dark.
Yeah.
But what I've done beforehand is I actually am saying to the audience, hey, do you want to hear this really dark joke? And then when they're like, yeah.
Yeah, it gets them on board.
It puts them, like, if they don't laugh, it's really back on them. It's like, well, you asked for this.
Yeah.
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 I actually did that last night. with the crowd, because obviously I've got very self-deprecating humour, and then I go into like the cancer joke that I've got, and then the stroke joke, and it puts people, it can put people offside. Like I went a couple of weeks back, we did a gig in Wyong, and I went from killing, I got an applause break, to bombing in the same set, and it was off the back of those jokes. So last night, it sort of put the fear in me a little bit with those jokes, but...
I know what you mean. That's like the joke I was doing about the kid on the couch that I was sitting with a glow stick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, fuck, this could go so wrong.
It does, yeah, yeah. But the feeling of you up there and you hit it and the whole crowd goes quiet. Like that quietness, and you're like, and then I hit the punchline, especially the cancer joke.
Yeah.
Like, because everyone, the whole set is usually laughing along, like, oh, he's just this fat, happy little dude who's up there making fun of himself. And then, like, I hit that, like, Kevin had cancer, and everyone, like, the whole crowd goes, oh, it's like a fucking handbrake. And when I hit them with the punchline of that joke, and they all laugh, it's like there's no better feeling.
Mm.
It's so much fun writing those types of jokes. And I'm seeing that from you. I'm seeing you write those types of jokes where you're almost pulling the handbrake on the set and then you hit them and it's so much more impactful.
Mm.
So that's one of the things where I was like, during your set here, I leaned over to Brady and I was like, fuck, dude, she's probably ready for a showcase. I'd say. And Brady was like, yeah, I'd say so. So, like, kudos to you. You've been turning up to writing groups, like, doing, like, putting in the hard work. Like, that it 100% shows. So, great work. Seriously.
I think a lot of the times it doesn't even feel like hard work when it's a really good joke. Like, I think, because I've done one on the rat test joke, and that one is probably the one that I've spent the longest amount of time on trying to, like, get the premise right and land it right. But a lot of the time... I'll just be driving here and I'll come up with something and it's like one of my best ones or
yeah that's exactly the same with me. Like my Arnie Bev joke, I wrote that, I was stoned in bed and I was just like, this idea of trying to make a, because my grandfather had a stroke really early on and was like profoundly disabled for his whole life.
Yeah.
And I was like, such a fucked up thing. And I was like, but I could make it funny. So I wrote it down and then the rest of it sort of just fell in. I don't know if you saw it in the first week, but that whole idea of refining the joke, like it started out, I was talking about like driving next to people in highways and then it turned into the shopping center and stuff like that. It's, yeah, I haven't been more excited for comedy ever than I have been lately. And that writing, and you see it with Ethan as well, like putting in a lot of your real world experience lately in a lot of sets. Sometimes it doesn't land as well, but
I'm just trying to do like new stuff now.
Exactly.
Because if we're getting showcases and like coming out, and you're gonna have repeat customers, and I don't want to be that guy that's like, oh, we fucking heard this last week. But that's my main fear at the moment. It's like, I know I can do five. I know I can do a type five. Anywhere I could probably go and do the jokes that I've been doing and they'll work, but that's my fear. Just seeing it twice and then someone's like, ah, this guy, he's a hack.
That's how
I think it's all made up on the spot type of thing.
Sorry, I got to interrupt.
No,
I need to watch people's faces. That's one of my terrible things that I do, is I'm just such an interrupter. And now I even forget what we're gonna say.
Talking about the type five and
So I think because like I've now got like a really solid 5 minutes, it's I'm really aware of how much I need to get new material and new jokes. Like I feel there's more pressure on now than ever, and then to try to deliver a joke that is to the same quality as some of my other ones that I've really worked on. Like I remember my first set was pretty much just 5 minutes of me talking about abortion.
Yeah.
And I was like, abortion and God is fucked.
Yeah.
And then I think even from that first set, I've then slowly cut down jokes and moved them on. And then it like pretty much my intro is still kind of based on some of the stuff from my first set, but it's just been churned and changed over time into something that then really works.
Mm. Yeah, I need a new opener because I've gone back to my old set, like my old opener.
Yeah.
Because it sort of works because I just had that breakup. And so I'm like, oh, I can now do the joke about living with my parents again because it's true. So I'm like, fuck it, I'm going back to that. But yeah, that's always, I've always find that hard, like coming up with a new opener. Like, because you get in the rut of like, oh, I'm just doing the same thing, like over and over again, like the same opener. And it's like comfortable, you know it's going to work, so you just stick with it. So, yeah, I'm trying to fucking break that at the moment too. But I haven't really broken it. Just went back to an old one. So I need to fucking write a new one. It's shit. I was going to ask, are you doing Raw this year?
I didn't even really realise that there was the entries happening last year. Like, yeah. When that was all getting arranged. And I really don't think I had the confidence or even the feeling like I even stood... Like, not that I even think I'd win if I entered, but, like, didn't think that I had comedy at... such a level, like, and my jokes were fine enough to actually feel confident to enter.
Yeah. I reckon with your jokes, it would be rough because they're, like, they want TV comedy sort of thing and your jokes are super dark.
Yeah.
Not to say that you couldn't write a Raw set. Like, you definitely could in your style. I reckon you could. Anyone can. It's fucking... You just got to tone it down a bit, I suppose. They just want... Yeah. I don't know, like this year, like Adam was saying, like there's a lot of woke stuff in there that's like flying now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was going to do it this year. I was like, ah, fuck it. Look, did it the other year and you're doing it, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm doing it. But when we were speaking about it, I think it was a couple of months ago, what you said to me was if I'm going to do Raw, like, I want to actually make a run at it. Like, I want to get to finals.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably, like, really important to understand, like, what are you trying to get out of this? Like,
some people just want to do a set. Because it's a big room and it's, like, it's nice to do a room with a couple hundred people in it.
That's where I'm at. Yeah. That's exactly where I'm at. But, I mean, you can only enter 3 times officially.
Yeah.
And... I'm like, okay, if I don't get through this year, I'm going to take that stance. Like, my final Raw entry will be, like, I want it to be as good as Elliot's set where he got to Nationals.
Yeah. And, if that's your goal and you're, like, planning on doing something like that, that's where, like, I just hammer out the same bits week after week.
Yeah.
Like Elliot did. Like, you don't have to do... If you're preparing for something like that, you just do the same set over and over again. Over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Do it in as many locations as you can and then have it bomb it like an open mic and then have it go well somewhere else. You're just, like, polishing the fuck out of it until you're like, no matter what, this is going to go well. So that's... I reckon that's how you do it. So... Yeah, but I'm competitive as fuck, so I'm like, I want to fucking win. I'm going in with that mindset. Like, I'm fucking winning this bitch. That's what's going on if I go into it again.
Well, I don't know what the competition's going to be like this year with at least the Newcastle comics. Like, I know Ben's doing it. He's got a pretty good chance of getting through, I feel, at least.
Yeah, I agree. Mm. The set that he did here on Friday night for the show, and it's that stuff to do with his kid with autism, and he does a little bit of stuff on Lifeline. It is such a good and solid set that I could really see it going all the way.
Yeah, Ben McLennan is one of the most talented comics in Newcastle, genuinely. He's... Recently, he hasn't been able to get to sets because he's got family commitments, as we all do. Like, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
None.
Yeah, well, look, I've...
Fucking single man.
Like, at the moment, like, I literally quit... Part of the reason why I quit my last job before I've got this new one was so that I could focus more on comedy and so that I could be there at gigs and be there after the show as well and hang out. I think that's a big... important thing, because if you're hanging around funny people, funny things are going to get said and you might have a funny riff that you can just like be the psycho who writes it down straight away. I do that all the time and I'll...
You hang out after the shows, I've noticed.
Yeah, I've been hanging out, and I think one of the main reasons I got into doing this was to try to create some social connections and meet people.
Yeah.
And I think, like, and I really want to put an emphasis on this, is that we might just have people that show up, like, which you might just assume, like, once or twice a start. But I think as comedians who are on the scene, it's really important to create a welcoming community and just including people in conversations and stuff. Because I did find it a bit difficult first coming in and being that outsider.
Yeah.
But I think if we remember that new comedians, like, they bring audience members. We need that.
Yep.
You know, not necessarily here. We get a good crowd here. But some of the other rooms that we had, like, oh, what was it? Wednesday night at the Wico, would it be nice just to have a couple people that stuck around all to the end because they're like, oh, our friend's on last.
Yeah.
But creating that...
That's the old trick, too. If someone new comes along and they bring a bunch of people, you're like, you're on towards the end, mate. Because after your set, everyone's going to leave.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they'll switch off or...
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I recently have really tried to reach out to the newer guys. Like, hey, you coming back?
Well, there was a bunch that turned up on Tuesday to the open mic here.
Exactly, yeah.
And, yeah, that one dude, he was super weird. But it was cool because it was just something different. But
yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, everyone was chatting to them after the show.
Yeah, 100%. And there was like, make sure you come back. One of the new guys, Pete, I was like, I walked up to him. I was like, hey, man, how'd it go? Like, how'd you feel? He's like, oh, man, like, you know, I'm, like, glad I got through it. Like, they're like, oh, I'm out the other side now, and they feel relieved because, like...
Oh, you remember what it's like.
Yeah, I'm...
I used to throw up.
Yeah, yeah. Ethan spent the first year,
longer
18
than
months,
that.
Just every, than that. Before every set, just throwing up. I was, like, I was so fucking... I was the complete opposite. I wasn't nervous at all getting up on stage. I'm like a extreme extrovert and crave attention. So I was like, oh, this is what I've been looking forward to. I wrote a bit on the way there. The set went so bad that like one of the chicks in the front row was like, oh, when I finished the set.
You got a sympathy groan.
Yeah, I got a sympathy like, oh, and I was like, that's not what I was after.
I
just kept coming back, kept funny. Trying to write jokes. I used to walk rooms as well. Like, you have no idea. Everyone like talks about there's certain comedians in the scene who don't do well consistently. And I'm like,
that was you.
That was me. That was me like for ages. And it was offensive. Like, people used to get upset, like, yeah, it was bad. So I'm like, now when I see a new comedian, I try and like reach out to him. So with this guy, the new guy, I was like, hey man, like, how'd you feel? And he's like, yeah, good. I was like, dude, you did it. I was like, you fucking did it. I'm like, all these people in the crowd, how many of them have ever done comedy or could do comedy? Mm. It's like a really, really hard thing to do, to put yourself out there and do it. And it's so rewarding as well.
Mm.
That was the one thing that I didn't realize I'd get out of it. Is just the sense of community as well, like, huge. Like, some of the friends I've made in comedy. I mean, Eddie's been like a huge, huge part of my.
Hell yeah! Like, shout out to Eddie for driving me to my van last night at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
I slept in the fucking Derby Street car park for a few hours till I was sober enough to drive, and then got home. Thanks, Eddie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, people do shit like that for you.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, like, so, I mean, it's
payback for running the fucking Wico.
Oh my gosh, that was a very interesting night, the Wico this week.
Yeah, it was crazy. I've never done comedy. Oh, in Sydney I have, but I didn't know who the comedians were.
So it was like a
crowd. So it was kind of like doing it to a crowd. And then at the end of the night, I'm like, oh, fuck, they're all comedians.
Yeah.
So it was one of those rooms. But I've never had it in Newcastle where there's been zero crowd, just comics.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was pretty fun.
Yeah.
We had a few at the beginning, but they were definitely not there for the comedy. Mm-mm. And then first chance to leave.
Yeah.
Like, I think the people outside who were really up the back, I think they were just so dedicated to smoking that's the only reason why they didn't walk. Like, it was just such an interesting time. Like, it was the first time I actually tried to do my set without any like prompts on me, nothing written on my hand or a little card.
Yeah, that's really good that you did that.
Oh, I was terrible at it. I was like, what's my joke?
And yeah, but at least it was one of those.
Was like yelling out my jokes to me.
Yeah, but at least it was at that room. Like, that's perfect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if it was like like a packed open mic here and you're like, fuck, what are my jokes? Like, that's going to suck a bit. But if it's just like the Wicko, it's like, no one gives a fuck.
Yeah, I guess like the other side of it was I was then feeling really bad for subjecting everybody to my jokes again. And
don't worry about it. It's all comedians and no one, like, until you mentioned it, like, I'd forgotten pretty much. Like, no one cares.
Oh, I know no one cares as such. I'm just boring people now. I guess that was the thing.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Over.
So I didn't get up and deliver in the way I normally do and, you know, have my mind ticking as much because my mind's also on, oh, God, I'm boring these people. But I know that the comedians don't care.
No, we don't care, but I know you care, and I'm the same. Like, I care. I wouldn't have got up there and did jokes that night, which is why I didn't.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm just going to get up and fucking talk about whatever and try and talk about something. But that's like in one of those scenarios where you can't do bits.
Yeah.
You just can't. That's what Sticks and Stones was like down in Sydney. Like, you go down there and they would deliberately, even if you had a really good bit that they hadn't heard, if you did that bit, they would just be like, fold their arms and just, so tell us what's really going on. And you're like, fuck. They're like, they want a story. They want to like know about your life and shit.
Yeah.
So if you do comedy bits down there, it's like, you'll just bomb. They'll make you bomb.
They'll heckle you. Yeah.
And then they'll make you like just talk about your life on stage, which is what you need to do in those situations. Like, you need to have a plan of like, what happens if it's just three or four people in the crowd? Like, what am I going to do? And talk about something. Just have a conversation with them, see what's going on.
I get really awkward though because I don't know what to say. And I see people doing like crowd work and I really admire that.
Mm.
But I don't think I'll be like, hey, what do you do? What's your job? Like that kind of thing. I think I'm just going to accidentally blurt out like, when was your last abortion? Like,
that's funny.
You might get there though. Like,
that's funny. Yeah.
That's the crazy thing about it is like, if you start talking about yourself and then it gets onto the topic of abortion and then she's like, oh, yeah, I had one of those. And you're like, oh, when was your last one? Mine was fucking... Like, you never know how it's going
to
go.
Mine was given to me by my uncle when I was 12.
Yeah. At least he paid for it.
Yeah. And also, you can come up with, with crowd work, it doesn't always have to be super organic. And you can have questions or phrases that you'll throw to the crowd to get a reaction back.
Yeah.
Like, I've got a couple of canned things that I can throw out. Like, if there's a big buff dude in the front row, I'm like, oh, fuck, man, aren't you everything I'm not? Like, straight away.
Like Elliot Singh, can I touch your muscles?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, like, with the crowd work as well, it might not work and you might bomb, but it's all a learning experience. It's all about, like, that... I've said it before and I sound like a wanker, but it's that growth mindset. Just like, it doesn't matter what happens, I'm gonna be better at the end of it.
Yeah.
So like, I might get up and I'll fucking bomb my dick off, but if you walk back to the backstage and talk to the comedians and someone was to make fun of you for bombing, you'd be like, the fuck are you talking about? I watched you bomb 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I got heckled by... Yeah,
Broden was literally trying to do that at the Wicker. He's like, it's going bad. I'm like, we all saw your fucking set, dude.
Yeah.
It was terrible too.
Yeah. I got heckled by a comedian at the Crown and Anchor a couple of weeks ago. And I was like, don't you fucking sit there and act like you didn't just bomb your dick off, man. And I'm like, and I started going at him. And I had to stop myself before I got real mean. But like, yeah. Look, if you're doing something new or you're experimenting or you're trying to get better, you'll have so much more respect from the comedians around you for trying that and trying to get better. And if anyone was to say anything, I think like the majority of the older senior comedians anyway would fucking slap that person, be like, motherfucker, shut up. Like,
at least they're trying something new.
Yeah, at least they're trying something
new. I'd rather watch someone die doing something new than 100%. Die doing their old, same old jokes.
And that's one thing I will say about like this scene is that I've never felt discouraged by any other comedian. Like, I remember the first time I bombed, it was Crown and Anchor, and I didn't realise so much about how things play out when you're mostly doing a comedian-only room. And everything was just so dead the entire way through. And I went home and I cried and I told Matt, I'm like, I don't want to do comedy anymore. This is awful. And yeah, he's just like, you need to go back out there. You're funny. You need to just keep going. But that first bomb was so painful.
The crown and anchor. It's ruined many a people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've bombed there quite a few times now. I think I'm up to about three.
You're always going to bomb. You're always going to bomb. And I've got, like, I'm getting better at bombing, if that makes sense. Like, if you throw a joke out and it doesn't land, you can acknowledge it. You only get one chance.
I did that last night.
Yeah, last night. It was fucking...
What was it? I did a joke that fucking bombed.
It was your, what was it?
The sweet potatoes.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Because you emphasize too much on the breakup.
Yeah.
And not...
Everyone just felt sad for me.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like...
It was fucked.
Yeah. And you didn't really... You didn't set up the context of the sweet potatoes. You didn't say, oh, I planted these fucking sweet potatoes 2 weeks ago, and now I'm not going to get, like...
Yeah.
All they know is they're like, oh, he's missing his sweet potatoes. That was all the context they had.
Yeah.
But you just were like, oh... Like, you just acknowledged it in the moment. It got a huge laugh, and then you moved on. And actually, your set went up from there.
Yeah, it did. Like, but yeah, like you said, you only get one of those.
Yeah.
Like, if you just keep doing that and keep bombing and then going, oh, that didn't work, and then you bomb again and go, well, that didn't work, there's only so many times they're going to laugh. Like, and feel sorry for you and give you that sympathy laugh one, and then you can move on. And then if you're good, then you're sweet for the rest of it. But if you keep doing it, you just, like... They'll just fucking hate you for making them laugh at every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think also, like, going up there, and even if you're not confident, just faking confidence makes a huge difference. Like, the times I bomb is generally when I am, like, unsure about what I'm going to be saying and, like, just scared and nervous. And then the more that escalates, the more I just bomb. So, and you notice a difference. Like, I remember... with Wilson, you know, seeing his, like how the audience received him was completely different from when he was getting up there and just, you know, saying his jokes versus him getting up there and just being like really strong and confident and approaching it, I guess, in a sense that going, I know I'm funny, you just need to like understand that, you know, like when I'm coming in to that, makes a huge difference.
Yeah, sometimes you got to drag the crowd along.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they're just not in the mood to laugh at certain things. Like last night was the first half was kind of like a more politically correct type of crowd.
Yeah.
I found they weren't like, yeah, even like the MC was like had to work and he was very fucking good. Mm. And yeah, it's like when you see someone that's that good working hard like that, you're just like, oh fuck, this might go bad. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I was generally.
You had to drag him.
He did. Yeah. I was the show last night, it was weird. So the crowd would laugh and then immediately shut up again.
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
So there's not like it was hard to get a rhythm, I found, for some of the comics in that first half. Like Ethan, like your first half of the set wasn't going real well.
Mm-mm.
You acknowledged the bomb, you got a rhythm and then you won them back. But they were very like, tell us some jokes, funny man. Like, and then if it didn't work, it didn't work. Whereas the second half, they got a little bit more lick it up. MCs, like, Jacques had much better, like, rapport with them now. They sort of knew him. Mm. Everyone was more relaxed.
Yeah.
So,
second half syndrome.
Yeah. So he was getting good laughs. And then I rolled in and... Like, I did well. Like, it worked out for me really well. But I think if I was in the first half, I think I would have, definitely would have had to work a lot more.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was talking to Mark Beattie about it. He's like, I always get fucking put on open. He's like, I'm sick of it.
Yeah.
He's like, you got to burn, like, 3 or 4 jokes before you get into it and they actually start laughing. And I felt that fucking last night real bad.
Yeah.
It's like, you're fresh out of the gate. It's like, oh, this is the first actual comic doing jokes after the MC. It's like, fuck, you got to be on.
Yeah. You got to have good one-liners. That's why Mark's such a good opener, though, is because he's got good one-liners.
Yeah. Gets them straight into it.
Yeah. Like, I've put Mark on shows. We did, we did the Movember comedy show, And then a couple of months later, we did Dubbo. And yep. both shows I put Mark on first. Not because Mark is the weakest comedian and there's a chopping order. Because Mark is one of the stronger comedians and I needed him to warm the crowd up. So, like, yeah, it's weird. There's a bit of a chopping order with comedy, I've found. You know, the weaker comedians are supposed to go first in the lineup. But it's not good for the room. You should be building a show around, like, people and their jokes, getting the crowd on side, and then making everyone else's job a little bit easier. And unfortunately, Mark just happens to, just the way his jokes are, he's a good opening act. And he gets the room warmed up. I think he's going to be a really good MC one day as well.
I've got a new segment for us to try.
Oh, okay.
It's called Shit of the Week.
Okay, well, that was probably this morning. I drank last night.
Same. No, it could be good shit. It could be bad shit. It's just any sort of shit you want to talk about in your week. Maybe if it relates to comedy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, something that went wrong for
and
you.
And if you don't have anything, just talk about a poo.
Yeah, okay. What about you, Ethan? You start out, you introduce the segment.
I probably should have thought about what I was going to do then. Maybe that's my shit of the week. I came up with a new segment, but I didn't think of any ideas for shit to talk about. Fuck, I don't know.
I mean, the Wicco.
That was the shit of the week.
Yeah.
The Wicco was just like a sewer. Really, if you're talking about shit. Like, it was, I guess, in some way brutal, but also some way therapeutic.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was really good to see people on stage, and I guess it was kind of like that, what is Sticks and Stones, or whatever that one.
Yeah.
Where they kind of, like, tell us something real, and, you know, people just being kind of put on the spot, but talking about stuff and kind of riffing with the crowd.
Yeah. I, with those bad shows, I think we as comedians need to fucking start embracing it more and getting into the show together. Like, we're all in this together. We're fucking getting up. Mm-hmm. You're having a go. You laugh if something's funny. Like, I think in comedian-only shows too, like, I shouldn't say heckling's the right thing to do, but kind of is. Like, talking back to the stage and engaging with someone who's up on stage to give them practice to crowd work.
Well, that's what Raoul was doing. He wasn't heckling, but he was like, fucking tell us more about this or that. He was like giving us prompts to like keep us talking on stage. He's like, you'll get there, just keep riffing it out, like keep talking.
Yeah.
Then if someone sort of like hit a flat spot, he'd just be like, oh, tell us about more about that. And you're like, oh, okay. It was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's not heckling, that's just...
I totally heckled. I loved it. I never heckle, and I was like, "Oh, we're comedians only." And I was just like, "Yes."
That's fine, I reckon. In that, if it's just all comedians, like it's pretty much fair game at that point.
And it was, you know, everyone kind of knows each other, and it's playful, and it's not done out of being cruel or trying to set someone up, like set someone up to fail. Like we had on Friday night here. So Friday night was my first time ever having a paid gig, and I'm so glad I went. I was actually put on first because, you know, funny speaking about that, the first time I've ever been put on first. And then, but by the second half, there was a lady sitting right up here at the front and she was a full-on Karen, like the worst. Like, I've never, like...
She's your shit of the week.
Oh, my God, yeah. She was just a shit stain. Like, everybody in the room hated her and she wouldn't even, like, let Mitch Garling, I think...
Yeah.
Yeah, he had to work so hard, like so hard on his set. Like it was amazing how well he got through it. Mm. But she would interrupt the punchlines, and then he's like, okay, well, you're not going to hear it. You know, screw you. You're not going to hear my punchline. And then after that, she's like, what was that punchline? And then at the end, she had the audacity to ask for a refund.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Was that here?
Yes. She asked for a refund. Holy shit. And Elliot's like, it doesn't work like that. Get
you
out.
Sat through the whole show. What the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted a refund, you should have got up. It's like sitting through a whole movie and going, I didn't like that. I'd like my money back.
She was like, oh, the event said it goes to 10 p.m. It's like,
oh, no, my God.
You know, like, get over it. You just ruined the second half for everybody, you know.
It probably would have went longer if she wasn't heckling.
Oh, I think the liquor license is everyone has to be out by 9:30.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think, yeah, in that instance, you'll always get a crowd member. People will turn up to have an argument as well. Mm. There is that. Like, someone will be like, I'm not enjoying this, so fuck everyone else in the room, and I'm just going to... Yeah, I'm just going to be a difficult person.
Yeah, it's fine if you're not enjoying it. Like, no problems. If people don't like what I'm doing, I'm like, that's fucking fine. But just fuck off then.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to listen to it. Like, exactly. No one made you force you to be here. Like, two people might go to the same house party and one person goes, oh, I had a great time. And the other person goes, oh, it was shit. I hated the music. Yeah. They drink shit beer and all that. It's up to people's fucking own perspective of it. But, yeah, they shouldn't fucking... It's not like you go to a house party and it's shit and you don't like it, so you ruin everyone else's fucking time at the house party. It's like, just shut the fuck up. If you don't like it, go home.
Yeah.
So did she heckle you?
I don't think I've ever been heckled, or if someone has heckled me, I'm in such a zone where, like, I can't see or hear anybody else and what's going on when I'm performing. So if anyone's ever heckled me, I've just completely ignored it. But I don't know. Maybe I just look like I can't take a heckle. Like, I'm... You know, completely small and breakable, and you know, maybe people think my feelings are too fragile, or that I'll fuck their husbands based on the rest of my set.
Did you
maybe
say that
that's why she was being a problem.
she was old, but I do say that, you know, I'll have a third marriage with someone who's ridiculously old, and we'll have a heart attack when we consummate the marriage.
Oh yeah,
you know,
you can get the payoff.
There's a way.
Yeah,
that's a good joke. Yeah, I think in that instance, if someone's being difficult, you can do one of two things. You can literally just ignore them and eventually hope that someone in the crowd sorts it out, because every now and then that'll happen. Someone will be like, shut the fuck up. Mm. And they'll be like, oh, shit, and then they'll shut up. Or, and I'll just be like, there's things you can say on stage which will just shut them down no matter what. It'll get a laugh from the crowd and it'll shut them down straight away, and then they'll shut up. Mm. I had a Friday night show here, and there was a guy who yelled out something fucking just... It was just like he was just... He thought he had a riff and it made no sense.
Yeah.
And then I was like, cool story, bro. And then like I was like... You can leave the jokes to me, mate. And the whole... It wasn't anything, like, witty or anything like that. It's a canned response to a fucking heckle. Yeah. And it just shut him down. And he shut the fuck up for the rest of the...
Actually, that was a good shit that I had. The fucking dude over here that was... I was doing, like, a Shaggy joke or something. And I was doing, like, oh, I don't look like the Jamaican Shaggy. And then he's, like, just sat there for about 5 minutes. And then he's, like... Oh, it wasn't 5 minutes. It was, like... 20 seconds, and he's like, oh, Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. Like, he just yells it out.
I got the joke.
I got the joke, and I'm just like, that's fucking amazing. I'm like, everyone else here in this room got that ages ago. You only just got it. And everyone just cracked up at him. And I was just like shaking my head, just like, what the fuck, cunt?
Yeah.
That was so good.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe he said it. I was just like, you're so fucking dumb, man. I can't believe you're heckling me with this.
Yeah.
This is great.
Well, the dude who heckled me, he was like, Lord of the Rings. No, he said New Zealand. Somehow Lord of the Rings had come up, and then he yelled out New Zealand. And it just made no sense.
Well, it was filmed in New Zealand.
Exactly. I know that's where he was going with it.
That's it.
Like, I understood, but I was like, I don't even know how he came up with
it. I always get him to elaborate. I'm like, yeah, it was filmed in New Zealand. What the fuck? Have you been there? Like, why are you bringing up New Zealand? I'll try and go into it.
Yeah, the problem is you can open up something. You can open up a can of worms doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Engage instead of just fucking slapping them down.
It's not so much for me that's the problem. It's for, like, if you open up the can of worms, like, and I've done this before with someone, then they think that they can talk all the time to all the other comics. And he's like, fuck, I should have never engaged with that person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that may be another reason why I haven't been heckled, because I don't engage. And I think once you start that dialogue with the audience, then they're like, yep, we can talk back. Meanwhile, I'm just like, I'm here, I'm delivering my punchlines, you get to laugh, but then we're moving on. Like,
I was at the family hotel, I got drive-by heckled. Some prick was on the way to the toilet, and he just, like, said some shit to me. And then he wasn't even there for me to smash him. Like, I can't remember what I said, but it got a huge laugh out of the crowd. And then he was out taking a piss. I was like, fuck that guy.
If any Maitland business owners, like pub owners, are listening to this, please return comedy to Maitland. I like to just be able to stagger home rather than having to drive all the way into town and then all the way back.
Yeah.
Bit of a trek.
Yeah, that's the same with me. Port Stephens, there's nothing out that way comedy wise.
No.
And there's no pubs
and
where
there
you can do
be.
It.
I can imagine the crowds.
It would be a fucking nightmare. Yeah. It really would. It'd be all old people.
Yeah.
So
bring your racist shit. That's what we learnt at Wyong. Old people love racist jokes for the most part. They're it was weird. Like Cabba's accents and stuff like that, crushing at Wyong. They just loved it. I was just like, this is the best shit we've ever heard. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. That's what I was going to ask you about. Do you want to talk about your pranks and stuff like that you do?
Oh, like, oh, God. What, from radio to...
Yeah, just any of that. Because they're amazing. I've had conversations with you about it. I'm like, Lauren's crazy, but this is the best.
I think I've always, enjoyed social experiments and pranks. Like, I think one of them I said to my friend... She invited me to her birthday, and it was in Sydney. I didn't know any of her friends other than one that was coming with me. And she's like, it's fancy dress. And I said, are you telling anybody else that? And she said, nope. I said, all right, I'll come in fancy dress as long as you don't tell anyone else that I'm in fancy dress.
Yeah.
And so I rocked up with this full-on pregnancy padding underneath my outfit, so I looked at least, 7-8 months pregnant. And then I got smashed off my tits.
Oh, yes.
And people are like, should you be drinking while you're pregnant? I'm like, look, I gave up the crack. And then her mum was like, kept offering me tea. Sure, you don't want some tea or anything? I'm like, no, no.
Got anything harder than booze?
You got any heroin?
And so, her parents were freaking out. Like, everyone else. Like, they were pulling my friend who I went along with aside, being like, you know, should she be drinking? Like, should you tell her to stop? And she's like, look, she's cut right back. And I'm legless. So
she's cut back.
And so, yeah, I'm really surprised I didn't get child, endangerment reports or anything that night. But I've always kind of enjoyed doing that. And then I've got a friend who I think I'm now blacklisted from NXFM, from their radio station, because if you go onto their Facebook page, they'll be like, oh, this is a story about, that's happened in the week.
Yeah.
And has anyone ever had, similar stories or can relate? And so if you type in something that is kind of, interesting, then they'll be
the
like, yeah, they're like, oh, can you have a call with us tomorrow morning about this? And I just write so much shit, just making crap up. And so they would call me and I will just take a story that they're wanting to have about, what mistake have you had at work, and then suddenly just derail the conversation where I was like, the reason I got fired from McDonald's, the original thing, for putting through all the Coke orders as Diet Coke, was because I have this war against obesity, because my mum is trying to be Australia's fattest woman. And they're like, oh, why is she doing that? What does she get out of it? I'm like, oh, she makes money through videos. And they're like, oh, on YouTube? And I'm like, no, RedTube. So all of a sudden, they're just caught so left of field.
Yeah, they just hit the dump button.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't put that on air.
Yeah, and then they call me afterwards and they're like, hey, do you think your mum is interested in coming on radio? That's a really interesting story. And I'm like, oh, no, look, she doesn't really like to get out of the house much.
As if you wouldn't just do a voice.
Well, yeah.
Give them the number, hey.
And then they're like, oh, we can... we can give her a voucher to Belmont 16 footers or you can eat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So my friend Claire, she was disappointed because she also has done the same thing where she's talked about having a turtle sanctuary and a spare bedroom and everything. She starts off the phone call with them by flushing the toilet right next to it and being like, oh, that's better. So she was like, I could have been your mum.
Oh, that is gold.
And then I've had like, because I had a post on Facebook for my wedding dress. I did it. It was like worn once by mistake and did this whole massive, like just comedic write-up for this wedding dress. And then I was put on radio with that. And there was so many awkward silences. Like, thank goodness it was, like, pre-recorded because they just didn't know what to say to me. They're like, so, what's it like going viral? And I'm like, I'm just glad it's not herpes.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Because they, like, they're pretty strict with what they can and can't talk
to.
Oh,
they're just so used to just PG, like, call-ins where it's just like, they just... Yeah, the usual crap.
Yeah.
They're not used to someone that has a brain calling in, messing with them.
Well, I was asked to go onto the morning show with that whole wedding dress ad, and they're like, can you come on the morning show? And I'm like, I'm not putting my face to this shit. Like,
yeah,
I just
no
knew
way.
That I would just be way too inappropriate, overshare something, or just say something that I'd regret. And, yeah.
But I reckon if you'd started you like doing comedy, you might have done it.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. Possibly. I don't know. I guess with the wedding dress thing and being the first marriage and the fact that...
It's a bit raw.
It didn't... No, I think I did a comedic thing because I was healing from it. Like, yeah. And I was going okay, and so I could have a joke at that whole thing. But I did actually say to them before the start of every single interview I did, I think I did it like about four, and I was interviewed by Mamma Mia and all these people. And I was like, look, I won't actually discuss the actual reason why we separated, like it's, you know, it's not funny.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think having like given the circumstances and being on TV with what was going on, it would have just really escalated the
private side.
Yeah, considering it was like, you know, a family thing. But otherwise, I did it under my comedy name of Lauren Lawrence, and I didn't have my face up at the time and everything. So it was able to have like a really good laugh about something without it getting too deep and dark.
Yeah.
You're kind of doing it as a character at that stage.
Yeah.
It's like it's not really you. It's just, your comedic persona.
Yeah.
Like making fun of it. But I could imagine that, like if you did that, like you might end up something like Married at First Sight or... Some like, show like that.
Like I used to play that,
just
like
messing with people.
I used to play like that Farmville game on Facebook and be like, "This is my preparation for Farmer Wants a Wife."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see you doing something like one of those shows, and just being a pest.
Yeah.
Oh my god, he totally wants me, but why is he sleeping with Karen at night? Like, and then Shelley, and then he comes to me and then wants to sleep with me. And of course I do it. Like, I just want to be really respected by this guy. Like, I would.
Should have been like, he's just, you know, he's much bigger than me. Like, what happens if I say no? What will he do?
Farmer wants a wife, yeah.
Like Farmer wants to make horsey videos. I don't know if I'm down for that.
I tried a joke, and it was about, you know, stepkids and trying to get on with them and, you know, their interests. So I was looking up different, like, search engine topics and, you know, his daughter's, like, my partner's daughter's really into horses. And I was like, so I looked up girl loves horse and...
Yeah. I was not prepared for what came up.
And then stepmom loves step, you know, stepmom and stepson together. Yeah. Like those were really weird instructional videos. But I try to do like stand up on it, and no one seemed to catch on or think it was funny. But I think it's funny.
Keep it in your notes because you might figure out a way to do it funny.
Yeah,
I've got old notebooks that I'll go back through sometimes and be like, oh fuck, I should write on that. Yeah.
There's bits that I'll put down. Like I wrote down an idea last night that I was like, it'll go well with my set. It's just I haven't got any. It's just a funny story about how I got catfished once. Like, and I've got to do it in a way because, you know, what happened was the person was pretending to be skinnier than they were. And I was like, I was cool with it. I was like, oh, like, I'm not physically attracted to this person, but I'll still hang out. And then they are a problem. Like, we were hanging out and they just started.
You're too fat to hang out with me? What?
No, like, it was like, the intentions was we were going to sleep together and stuff like that. But when, like, I met them in person, I was like, no. But, like, they're still a cool person. Like, I'll still hang out with them, still do all of that stuff. And then they got drunk and were just a problem.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
sounds like a good time. What's their number? I'm single.
Yeah.
I never asked the lady that liked motorbikes.
Oh, yeah.
Someone actually likes motorbikes last night. Well, her friend dobbed her in.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, everyone usually says no.
Something about the vibrations through the seat that really gets women interested.
Is that what it is? Yeah. I've got a really loud motorbike. Yeah. Yeah, let's do the fucking new bits segment then.
Yeah.
To wrap it up.
Have you got anything you've written recently?
Well, I've got, like, some recent stuff I've just done.
It doesn't have to be, like, anything even remotely funny. It can just be an idea for a joke or, like, a premise or whatever.
Okay, so I've got the punchline, and I think the punchline is, and that's how my dog ended up going to my year six formal while I stayed home and recovering from being neutered. So that's the punchline, but I haven't worked out how to work up to it. And it's all kind of based on, like, my mum used to always, like, call me by the dog's name, or she had, like, this family schedule where every single family member got a name, like, you know, their own section. And mine was always next to the dog's, and she used to write in my column instead. So I used to have, like, worm me and everything like that on my on my schedule. And so I kind of need to find the right way of setting that up. But this whole idea that my mum is just terrible and gets the dog and I mixed up all the time.
I love writing back from punchlines. Some of my best jokes, I've come up with the punchline before I've written the premise. So it's like, it's almost like, yeah, it's getting a jigsaw puzzle. You've got one piece and now you've got to build around it. I have a lot of fun doing that lately. That's a good bit, though, because that'll work with your set, because you've already got a bit about your mum and stuff like that.
I've got to, like, try to space out all my mum jokes. I swear, like, I must be, like, your trying to sort out all my childhood trauma just by talking about my mum.
You and me both. it's a whole
mum
thing.
Used to get me and the dog mixed up. She'd always put peanut butter on.
That is funny. You need to write that down.
I do run all my jokes past my mum beforehand. I'm like, Mum, I'm going to be telling this joke, and it may imply that you're dead and I'm carrying around your ashes. And she's like, tell me what it is, and then I tell her, and she's like, yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
And now you have to actually do it if your mum gets cremated.
No, I think she wants to get buried. She's already told us from a young age, like, how she wants it all done.
We can still do that.
She won't
you
be
just
around
need some,
to care.
Yeah.
You just need to recruit some big fellas for the pub crawl that can carry the coffin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the... I always forget what I was going to say. Shit, already gone.
All good.
Brain.
Some That's joke.
You know how I, like, cut that bit? Yeah, cut that bit. Me just always losing track.
I do this podcast stoned. I'll forget what I'm talking about mid-sentence sometimes. I just be like, yes.
Yes. Anyway.
So I went to the shops and yes. Yeah. I've got a couple. I've been writing a fair bit. One I've got is I've always wanted to grow a mullet, but I'm not, like, tough enough for it. Like, I think you've got to be able to fight to grow a mullet. The only thing I'm fighting is my belt buckle of a morning. That
you're going to say your sexuality.
That and the homoerotic urges there I get from my wife's dad.
There it is. We got there.
Yeah, yeah. It was coming. It was coming.
You do a lot of gay jokes on stage.
I do. I fucking love it. I love it. Another one. I used to run a lot, and I'd always ask myself why I do this, and now you can tell by looking at me. I never found the answer to that question.
That's good.
I like that.
Yeah.
Once I got high before a set, thinking I'd be funnier, more in the moment. Instead, it made me just have a panic attack in the car park.
What you were running away from was looking like you do now.
Yeah. I got one that I told Ethan last night. I was like, God damn, the gym is homoerotic. It's like I do two weightlifting motions and then... So, like, I'll act it out on stage. So I'll be, like doing bicep curls, like, in the mirror.
Yeah.
Like, with all everyone around me staring at me. And then I'll do, like, deadlifts where you squat down and put your ass out. And then the last one is just me, like... And my trainer's got me doing this new exercise where I just do that on stage. I think that'll be funny.
You
but
just need to get, like, the shaker weight.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Mm. Yeah, and then I've got the story. Yeah, I've got an idea, like, that I want to come back to that I wrote about a couple of years ago, now that I'm a little funnier. My cousin went to Mexico to pick fruit, and it's usually the thing is, obviously, Mexicans go to America and that's the jobs they're getting. It's like my cousin went to Mexico and stole hardworking Mexican jobs. Like, I've got to set it up a little bit, but yeah, like, maybe I'll act it out like a Mexican accent. Is like,
no,
he took our jobs.
Do not do that.
I hate people. Like, I think you've got to be so careful when you're doing
race jokes,
and you know, how well can you deliver your set without trying to put on an accent? You know, we have the stereotypes, but in many ways I kind of think we need to keep to our own lane. Like, of course, anyone's welcome to say whatever they want on stage, and you know, by all means I do, but in the long run, I don't know, I think the overall PC culture is that I don't want in 5 years time or 10 years time someone looking back at me like, they really shouldn't have been doing that accent, or I don't know, I just...
Yeah, look, yeah. I get that, and my opinion on jokes in general is, if it's a joke, if it's aimed at being a joke and aimed at being funny and there's no malice behind it, like...
Yeah, context is important.
Yeah, context is important, and I think comedians should always be testing the line. You should always be testing the line. And I mean, like, okay... You might not necessarily be offended by a joke about Mexicans because you're not Mexican.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, if there's a Mexican person in the crowd and they're offended by it and they come up to me after the show, I'll be like, hey, like, I'm sorry.
It'll never
like,
be a Mexican person.
There won't.
There'll be a white lady that's like,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly.
No.
And I think you, if, my rule is, if you make a joke about anything, okay, there is always someone in the world who would be offended,
yep.
And that's not what you're aiming for. So either you draw the line that comedy is comedy, and you're just trying to make people laugh, and you're actually doing it for a nice reason. You're trying to improve their life. You're trying to make them happy.
Yeah.
If you joke about one thing, then you can joke about everything. So, like, you've got a lot of jokes about abortion. Now, there might be people
in
the crowd.
I've been cutting them out, all right?
They're good jokes. Don't cut them out.
That's
they're
the
good
joke,
jokes.
You idiot.
That's, yeah. Oh, fuck. Yeah. Motherfucker.
Cut them out.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That's the highlight.
Okay.
Mitch doesn't get the joke.
Oh, man. I was watching too much Rogie. Losing my sense of humour.
Yeah.
Actually, I have been thinking about doing that as a bit of a stand-up bit, but I'm just trying to find the right crowd to do it with. Is, you know, the clinic have told me that I've had too many abortions, so now I'm trying to cut them out.
Yeah.
But I think
someone's going to get offended at that.
Yeah, exactly. So
someone's going to get offended at any fucking anything. Joke that you do. Yeah, so maybe because it's not funny to them. It might not be a reason in particular. They might just not like it. Like, you can't keep everyone happy at the end of the day. But if you don't want to do it, like, by all means, don't do accents. Like, if you feel uncomfortable, I wouldn't pick on any comedian for not wanting to do a certain thing or for doing a certain thing. It's like, well, that's their thing.
Yeah,
exactly.
Let them do what they're going to do.
Yeah.
As long as they're trying to be funny, not trying to be a fucking dick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not up there saying, make America great again. Mexicans are stealing our jobs. Saying the exact opposite.
No, and I think that works really well, like,
you
know, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I just think, yeah, sometimes when we're going into accents, like, I think if I was to ever sound like I'm doing an accent on stage, I would just be really just trying to mimic what it was like speaking in tongues when I was in, like, the Hillsong type church, because everyone just sounds like they're, I don't know, being Arabic or anything, like,
that's like, it does sound Arabic,
it does.
That's like, that's kind of the whole,
and if you need to do that to sell the joke, well, then, and that's going to be what makes it funny and make people laugh, well, then that's how the joke's got to go.
Yeah,
unfortunately, some people might get offended, but they're not the ones that are out here watching comedy laughing, so it's like, well, I'm not catering for you, so if you don't like it, just don't watch it. Like, if anyone gets offended at it, then it's fucking their problem. But if you're not being mean about it, that's fine. But I've done that joke about the Chinese kid in the workshop, and I've done it with the accent and without the accent, and if I commit to the accent, the joke always goes better.
Yeah,
I've noticed, because I've tried to PC it up and just do it without it, and it just doesn't hit.
Yeah.
And it's the last line of the thing. And it was actually Ben McLennan that gave me the line. And when he said it to me, he did it in the accent and it was fucking hilarious. And I was like, dude, can I have that line? He's like, yeah, go for it. I'm like, all right, I've got to do it now.
Yeah. But, it's a good joke.
Yeah. But like the context of the joke is like fucking it's shit that he has to work in a fucking sweatshop.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I don't hate Asian people. How could you draw that from it?
So you're it's not weird. Punching down though either in that situation. You're not trying to make a horrible racial stereotype or mimicking a voice for the sake of like
Well, that's humor. What offends me about voices. Like, I do find it offensive when it's just hack.
Yeah.
Like, if it's just, there's no reason for it, then it's like, well, why are you doing the voice? Like, it doesn't make it any more funny.
Yeah.
But, like, if it has to be in there, I get that it has to be in there. But if it's in there for no fucking reason, it's like, now you're just being racist for no reason.
You're building an image, too. We were talking about last night. Like, you're building, like, everyone can picture that kid in the sweatshop. And then, like, the person standing over them, how they would talk to that person is exactly how you deliver the joke. Yeah. So you're not making fun of the person or their race or anything like that. You're building an image in the crowd's mind of what it is, and you're making fun of the situation, which is, like, nobody cares, work harder, like that that joke. It's fucking, it's funny. So, look, I think you can... Yeah, that's why I've got the idea. Like, I'll see stuff on stage where I'm like, almost semi, like, feel... There was a comedian that came in on Tuesday and was making fun of comedy in general. And I was like, okay, dude, like, there's...
Why are you here, then?
Yeah, why are you here? And also, there's people who, like, it's such a fucking... We just finished a conversation about how, like, positive comedy's been in our lives, like me, Ben, and Rummy. And then he gets up and he starts shitting on comedy. And I was like, yeah, a little bit fuck you. But then I was like, nah, you know what? He's just up there trying to be funny. Like, he's just trying to make a joke. He didn't... personally he's
trying to make a joke
me.
About comedy.
Yeah. And then I was immediately just like, yeah, cool, let it go.
Yeah.
I guess if that's, like, you know, if someone's doing that and then I don't believe, like, the crowd was really swallowing it so much and, like, being really happy with it and laughing, like, the joke wasn't really landing, you know. If someone's talking shit and it's not working, then they're going to have to abandon that joke.
That's like, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if people aren't finding it funny, it's not going to... Don't worry about it, because it's not going to be around for long.
Yeah.
No one's going to want to go up there every night and repeat the same fucking dribble that's, like, hateful garbage and just get fucking dead silence, people just judging them. Like, that doesn't feel fucking good.
No.
But no one will keep doing that. It's fucking awful.
Yeah. Yeah. What new bits have you got, Ethan?
I was just looking at that. I've got fuck all, man. I was trying to shorten down that story about getting busted at the train station.
Yeah.
With the, like, my girlfriend packed me a Ziploc bag full of antihistamines.
Yeah.
And, like, I was really stoned in the morning and I was just, and I was on a unicycle as well. And I'm, like, sitting at the train station stoned on a unicycle and this dog comes up and I'm like, oh, hey, buddy. And then I look up, and it's just like a cop on the other end of the lead. And I'm like, fuck. Like, mate, your owner's a dick. And then they went and, like, searched through all my shit. And then, it turns out they're antihistamines. And they're like, you should keep them in their proper sealed container. And I'm like, well, that wouldn't stop you fucking going through my shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're going to look through it anyway. But you can't tell the cops the truth. You can't be like, oh, fucking, it's actually just because I'm really stoned and I smell like weed. Like, that's why the dog's sad.
Yeah.
You can't just be, because otherwise they'll just fucking hate you more. But it was just fucked. Like, I was like 19 at the time. And they were like, when they found the bag full of pills, like, I watched all their eyes light up. They're like, oh, yes, we've fucking got him.
This is going to make the
I've just never seen, like, a bunch of, like, people older than me, like, happy to just fuck my life more than them cunts.
Yeah.
Like, that was, like, that switch in my head where I'm like, I don't fucking like cops. Like, that's a kind of a thing to do. Like, yeah, I get it. Like, they've got to do their job and shit like that. But don't be so fucking happy about it.
Yeah.
Like, they, like, legit, like, pleasure of, like, oh, we're going to fuck this kid. I'm like, oh, man. That's rough. But I knew I was getting out of it, too. So I was just sitting there just going, there are antihistamines, brother. So fucking test away. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was fucked.
I think my favourite experience of watching cops have that, like, great moment was, it was just around the corner here. I think it was, like, near outside of Finnegan's. And this would have been probably about 10 years ago. And this guy had been in a fight. He's sitting drunk, you know, in the corner. And they're like, oh, where are you from? And he's like, Singleton. And they said, with the army? And he's like, yeah, I'm in the army. And they're like, not anymore.
Like,
fucked all of his training up.
Yeah. I've seen that so much. Yeah, I've seen that so much.
Cops not like people in the army and shit? Is there a bit of fucking back and forth between there?
No, it's like the cops in general have to deal with young 18-year-old boys who are being taught how to kill people and being taught to be aggressive and also being taught, like, you have to follow.
Pack, like, mentality sort pack of thing. If one person jumps in, everyone's in.
100%. Yeah. 100%. You're dying for the person next to you, essentially, in that situation.
So you're all going out to a pub, and then if one person gets picked, then it's just a fucking shit show. Yeah. And then the cops have to clean up the mess. Exactly. I can understand how that'd be annoying.
Yeah. And then there's also, like, there's a lot of ego that comes along with being in the military. You're like, yeah, I'll wear the fucking uniform. Like, I'll die for this country sort of thing. There's that side of it. And then you get... then you get the locals in the area who've been dealing with, like, they don't notice all the good interactions you'll have with someone in the military town. You only remember the bad. So then you get the locals who will purposely, like, try and wind up the people in the RAF, and then you get that kick off as well. So there's so much to it. I don't think the cops in general, I think the cops in general probably have more in common with the people in the military in general. It's just they're the ones who have to fucking deal with it. And honestly, that guy who got into that huge fight and stuff like that, you don't want him in a unit. He's going to be a problem. Like, you don't want the guy who's going out all the time causing issues, because you can't trust that person to not be impulsive in a situation where you need
in Afghanistan, he's just like, wild card, Finnegan's motherfucker. Fucking runs out and gets shot in the head. And then you're like, oh, now it's a fucking problem now. We've got to carry him.
Yeah. Well, the section sergeant says, I need you to fucking hold this field of fire out to the northeast and lay suppressive fire. And then he goes, I know better. I'm going to fucking charge that machine gun pit with a hand grenade. And you're like, now we've got to go out there and fucking rescue him.
And bring his arm back.
Yeah. So what realistically what you need people in the military is, you need people who can go out, not be a problem ever, and also get along with people socially as well.
Same with comedy.
No, I had this instance like quite a while ago, because I think people in the military in general don't like people kind of giving them a bad reputation so much. So I used to work as a sexual health outreach worker into the Newcastle parlours.
Yeah.
And in one of them, they actually had a picture of the guy, his name, and he had, you know, done some pretty horrible things which weren't consensual. And the police couldn't really do anything. And but they knew that he was an army guy and that he was going to be getting moved to, I think it was Darwin. And so I knew someone who was already there, passed on his name, what he had done. And that guy, that once he got stationed there, had just a horrible reputation, copped it from everybody.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
you've got to weed them out. Like, honestly, you've got to weed them out. It's, I've got a friend in, I'm not even going to say any context, but they've told me about someone who was in the military who did something pretty bad. And I was like, you have to report that, because that person's in a position of power, and they might be in a position of power into the future. And I'm like, it's fucked. Like, you'll meet some of the best people. I think the majority of people in the military are some of the best people you'll ever meet in your life. And when you sign up to the military, you sign up like, okay, I'm signing on this dotted line. It might get me killed. It might get me killed in the future. And I'm doing it not for me, not for my family. I'm doing it because you've got a country and like it's your fucking country, and it's like, and no one's going to come here and take that away from me. That's the way I felt when I signed up, and unfortunately, like, when I got through and after nearly 10 years, I didn't feel that way anymore.
Yeah.
That's when I knew it was time to leave. But I saw people who probably never felt that way in their life.
Yeah. Well, my first husband was military. He'd gotten out before we got together. And, like, I don't know. I guess there's so much bordering stuff over what's, like, really, you know, some fucked up stories that should never have happened. And, yeah. But I think there's a definite, you know, you're a CV, like a civilian versus, you know, where we are, and took him a long time to not see himself as above everybody else because I had a gun and I went to war. But that is the most I should say about that.
Yeah, look, there is like an ego that comes with it, and a lot of people in the military tend to think they're better than people, or because you're also dealing with rank as well. So if you get promoted, then you're better than everyone else around you who didn't get promoted.
Yeah.
So it creates that, like, there's always an inherent competitiveness. And what I found was it wasn't necessarily the individuals who were the best at their jobs or should have been in those positions. It was the best people who could write good reports for themselves and would volunteer for things, not for the sake of volunteering because it's for the betterment of the unit and what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
It's for them.
Yeah.
So, like, it was when, towards the end, I just found it, like, it just sort of put a bad taste in my mouth. I saw all these people doing these things, and they weren't doing it just to be good at their job or to help the people around them. It was always about being promoted because they want that status. They want the extra chevron. They want that rank. And
Do you think there's, like, I know it's completely different, but do you think that there's competitiveness in the Newcastle comedy scene, or do you think...
Fuck yeah.
Yeah,
100%. I am. I'm competitive.
We are.
I'm just not a dick
with
about it.
With each other.
Yeah.
Really, heaps. Like, and
You can be, like, nicely competitive. You don't have to be a dick about it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be the best. Like...
Yeah.
But there's... Yeah. There's, like, being a good winner and a bad loser,
yeah,
type of shit.
You always
don't go around going like, "I fucking crushed and everyone else sucked." Like,
yeah,
don't do that.
Yeah, there's always like it's always sort of. I'm always sort of going like, I get a lot of self doubt, and I'm very self critical, and I fucking can't take compliments.
Mm.
So I'm always weighing myself up in that frame of mind against people, and early on, I had to realize that, like, people being better around me makes me better.
Yes.
So the competitiveness went from, like, I'm better than you to I've got to get better because this person's getting better.
Yeah.
And I'll, like, give people feedback, not from a position of I'm trying to tell you something to make me look smarter than you or better than you. Giving you feedback because it's like a thought I've had, and
it's going to make you better.
Yeah, and I appreciate it back. Like, some of the best advice I've ever gotten from Ethan is probably some pretty brutal advice. Like, Ethan will sit me down. He won't sit me down, but he'll come to me and go, "Hey, man,
about your set."
Yeah, that joke is not working. Throw it away. It's not working, and you've got to swallow your ego a little bit.
Oh yeah,
and be like, "Yeah, all right, yeah, no, fair enough," and like. Eddie's, like, giving me really good advice. Adam's giving me... All the comedians around me have given me really good advice. And that competitiveness is about, like, getting better, but not at the cost of other people around you. We should all be growing together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely agree.
Yeah, if I see someone doing something that's, like, better than what I'm doing, I'm like, fuck, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Like, it makes me better. I've always been like that. Like, you used to hang out down at the skate park, kid would do a trick, and you're like, oh, I can fucking do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's that sort of thing. But you're not just, like, you're not shitting on the other person because, like, oh, you can't do it or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things. Like, I'm not sure, you know, if it necessarily was happening or whether it's just because I'm really bad at being social. But, like, I think for new people coming into comedy in the scene, it's actually so important that we are welcoming, because you can feel like such an outsider.
Mm.
And I don't want it to ever be, because people will feel like, oh, new person on the scene, this is an extra person to compete against, or, you know, like...
Yeah, nah, no, it's nothing like that. Yeah. I think it's just human nature in general,
yeah,
is that there are, like, people form groups and then they're sort of more tighter with other people.
Oh, yeah.
And they're just going to get along better because they've known each other longer. It's just human nature.
Yeah.
So there's, like, that thing too of, like, you just have to literally put in the time and people will eventually come around to you.
Yeah.
Like, when I first met James and Luke and Elliot and all those guys, they're like, well, you just didn't, like, talk to them that much because
yeah,
you don't know them personally. Yeah. But if you keep turning up consistently, then eventually you start chatting about things and then you've just got new friends.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's the same as fucking going to a new school. Like,
yeah,
you go to a new high school and it's like, I don't fucking know anyone here. But I'm going to be going here every fucking day, so
yeah,
no one's got any choice but to like me. And then some people are cunts. Like, you're just like, oh, well, I'm not going to talk to that person.
Yeah.
You find your group. But, yeah, there is really only one group in comedy, so, yeah, should be inclusive of everyone. And I think comedians are, because we understand that, like, most people that get into comedy are fucked in one way or another.
Yeah.
So, like, if I see someone that's new that comes along, like... I'll give Broden shit, but he knows I love him. But, like, Broden comes along and, like, says fuck shit on stage. I'm like, I still like him because he's fucking doing comedy.
Yeah.
Like, if you're doing comedy, you're automatically, like, in the club of comedians. And, yeah, be nice to those people.
And
don't
just
shit on them.
Yeah, showing up as well. Like, if you're just there, I've said to a couple of the junior comedians, I'm like, be there at the table, hanging out, and if someone's like holding court and they're riffing and stuff like that, chuck it in. And like, if it doesn't land and everyone turns around at you, you're like, oh well, I fucking went for it.
I tried.
Like, how many times have I fucking said something, not only on this podcast, but like just in general, and it doesn't land, and you just like, and then you just laugh at that situation, and then people, if people can see you can take a joke, if someone like makes a joke and you can take it and you riff along, you'll fit in.
Yeah.
I think that's
But people that are cool, like if there's people that are already in the group that are cool, if someone new comes along and they're just sitting there, but they're just there, but maybe that person's seen something that they've done or whatever, they'll say something to relate it to them, to bring them into the conversation.
Yeah.
So it helps both people out. It makes you look better because you're like, hey, I'm trying to include this person.
Yeah.
So you get that, like, endorphins, like, good feeling of, like, including someone, and then they're like, oh, I feel included.
Yeah.
So there's no fucking reason not to, like, try and bring people in.
Yeah.
Unless that person's an absolute cunt.
I especially try to make extra effort to speak to the new people, just knowing what it is like and not putting as much onto them. Like, of course they've got to contribute to it, but yeah, not putting as much onto them for them to then come be part of the group. It's kind of like opening that door and
yeah, you know, exactly,
like, sit with
us. Yeah, yeah.
That kind of thing.
Which, yeah, like I said, that makes you cool. That makes you look better as well. Not that you're doing it to look better, but it helps you as well. Because those people are then gonna, if they hang around, are going to come up and then they'll be like, oh, I remember Lauren. She was the one that fucking came up to me and said, like, come in and fucking hang out. Yeah.
Tell you who I absolutely have loved coming into the scene, and I've only met her once, but I've spoken online and everything, Frankie.
Yeah,
Frankie's
such
awesome.
An amazing comedian.
Yeah,
and yeah.
She's
so
great.
New, and just, like, we always got into a bar fight for her her friend. So we had, like, this guy
come up. The short, dark-haired girl.
Yeah, she had kind of like this pixie cut.
Yeah, the problem.
Yeah.
I call her the problem.
The problem.
Because she is.
She loves
She's
to talk.
The problem, yeah.
Yeah.
She's a very... I like her, don't get me wrong, but yeah, she can be a problem.
What happened? There was nearly a fight.
Oh, yeah. So it was after a show.
At the fucking Crown and Anchor. Yeah, well, that's standard.
Yeah, it was after the show and we're just sitting at a table. She's just minding her own business. Definitely not a problem.
Yeah.
And she's a really cool chick. And this guy just comes up incredibly drunk and just looks at her tattoos and is like, what's this? What's this shit? And she's like, tattoos. And then kind of just comes back to our conversation. And this guy remains standing there just staring. And it's like, look again at him. He's like, what's this shit? And it's like, their tattoos move along. So we try to move him along just like nicely, like have a good night. He wouldn't go. And so then Matt kind of was like, you know, rah a bit.
Yeah.
I'm like, Matt, his night's going to be ruined. Like, we've already got people going to go to the bar staff. His night's already ruined. Let's just keep ours good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was coming out with some pretty horrible homophobic stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. And then on his way out with security, he actually tripped and fell and smacked his head on the cement.
Good.
And it was satisfying. You could hear
bit of instant karma.
You could hear the crack from across
the room. You could hear the echo of his empty fucking head.
Yeah. It was like a gong.
Just nothing in that skull.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's fucked. I haven't seen any of that shit for a while, to be honest. So, yeah. Now, good on you, Newcastle. Bringing it back. That's fucking good to see.
Bring back the biff.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, that's a problem. That is a problem. I'm glad I wasn't there. I fucking have a bad habit of inserting myself into those situations.
Yeah. You nearly fucking punched someone's lights out because they were going to go at Adam because he made a joke about Durries down at the Happy Wombat. That was ages ago.
That's right. Yeah. Fuck. Yeah, my first year in comedy. We're at the Newcastle Comedy Festival, middle of the day. This guy walked past asking for Durries, and Ronan goes,
stirring him up.
Go check the garden at KFC. There's usually like butts in there.
Yeah.
Helpful advice.
It was. That's what Ronan was saying. I was just being helpful. I'm like, mate, you knew what you were doing.
Yeah.
And then he kept like, he'd go to walk away and then he'd come back and he'd start like going at Ronan. And then eventually like he's come back the third time and then I just took off my glasses, jumped up. I was like, fuck off. And then shoved him and then he just walked up the road. And Ronan's like, oh, thanks, mate. And I was like, why the fuck did I do that? I don't even know Ronan. I was like, I nearly just fucking ended my life over cigarette butts. Yeah. So dumb.
Adam would just keep going too, just keep pushing buttons until he gets punched. And then he'd be like, well, you lose the competition of, like, because to him it's a game. It's like, just keep pushing the buttons until you fucking snap and then I've won. Yeah. Because you got physical and I didn't. So I am the superior shit stirrer.
Yeah, exactly.
Being so small, I just have to rely on my voice and putting on this, like, really commanding, like, you know, it shrinks men down. It's amazing because, you know, you're setting your authority over them, like, with this big voice from this tiny little person. So I think I'm pretty much just imitate my mum, to be honest. But otherwise, like, I don't know. I describe myself as small, breakable, and rapeable. Like, I'm fucked if anyone wants to take me on.
I've got a friend of mine, and
that's the weirdest
she's probably the exact same size as you and build, and she's just recently taken up boxing. She's getting really, really good. And it's like, I feel sorry for anyone who picks her.
That hasn't done any training. They're going to get lit up.
Light them up.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly the same, like very similar build to you and everything.
Oh, I tried doing the gym. I lost a lot of weight going to the gym, but then I would do things like yoga and trying to do downward dog because I'm hypermobile, so my joints and everything go beyond regular means. So I was doing downward dog and I managed to tear ligaments in my hand that day.
Oh, fuck.
And ended up like with the ganglions, this thing is on my hand. Like, it was horrible. So it kind of swore me off the gym for quite a long time and just being like, I'm not built for anything.
Hey, yoga's all about like learning the limits of your body. So you did. You completed yoga.
Yeah.
On to the next shit.
Yeah. Jiu-jitsu's like that as well. Ethan did jiu-jitsu twice.
Broke myself. Yeah.
I rolled onto his hand and then he
crushed my hand.
Yeah.
And then I was rolling with another dude and he like rolled this way, but his ankle was like digging into my ribs as we rolled onto the mat and it just cracked a rib.
Oh.
I was like, well, that's enough jiu-jitsu for me. I'm getting more injured than doing this than I would ever need jiu-jitsu for. Like, I'll just run away if there's a fight. I was like, nah, fuck that, I'm out.
I'll chalk bones Ethan.
Yep.
I think pretty much. I just like talk about one subject, if I'm held hostage, just talk about the one subject that interests me most, then someone's just gonna be like, just send her home.
Yeah.
Like, I love, you know, because I'm, as you guys know, I'm into ants. I have an ant business, so I can just, you know, be like, so Mimesia brevinoda, Like, yeah, you just start talk talking about, you know, we removed them one by one. We found a snake the other day, and it, like, I don't know, maybe that will interest people too much if I start talking about snakes in mounds, but...
I got a snake in my mound.
I'm not talking about an actual snake. I'm just talking about the one that was in my vagina.
What's that doing there?
I woke up and I discovered a snake in my vagina.
Yeah. It happens to the best of us.
It does. Mm-hmm. It does. Yeah.
All right, let's wrap it up.
All right. Talked a lot of shit.
Yeah. That was good. Fucking thanks for coming on.
Sorry, I wasn't funnier. Like, I've listened to the other podcasts, and I'm like, there was just like, boom, 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 and like, let's talk about military affairs.
It was you, not me. I'm joking. It was me. It was me. Yeah.
You went on in it, and then I just contributed, and...
No, that was good. Don't worry. It was a good podcast.
All right. Thanks for Newcastle Comedy Club for having us. This is How to Not Comedy. We'll fucking see you next week.